For Radioactive comes from the members of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Ellsworth on the Bucksport Road, with Sunday services at 10:30 a.m., affirming and promoting respect for the interdependent web of existence and the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all.
Election Unspun, Monday through Friday at 7 o'clock, only on Morning Main.
Welcome to Election Unspun, a Pacifica Radio and Free Speech Radio news production. I'm Leanne Caldwell. To sift through all the talk this campaign season, visit us at www.electionunspun.org. What's going on while I'm singing the blues? If you open up
your ears, you can hear the news. It's just a few seconds before 4 o'clock, and you are tuned to WERU-FM 89.9 Blue Hill, 102.9 Bangor, and streaming online at WERU.org. And this is Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal for March 6, 2008. I'm Amy Brown, joined today by guest co-host Sam West, who produced today's report. Over to you, Sam.
Hello. Today we're going to be listening to a clip of Jim Harney at his presentation during Call to Action. In this, he talks about his encounters with, as he puts, the crucified while on his trip to Argentina. And I feel that this presentation has a very strong message about Southern and Central America violence, where gangs in the streets of various cities, there's a lot of violence in the cities down in Central and Southern America.
The big issue.
And the immigrants who are coming from Southern and Central America, they go through like death-defying journeys, and they come up to America. So that excerpt is of his presentation.
All right. So we'll go to Jim Harney. Thanks, Sam.
Welcome.
Good afternoon. Welcome on behalf of Call to Action, 30th anniversary year. I'm Judy Bettis. I'm from Memphis, Tennessee. I've been welcomed myself, and I welcome you. Our guest speaker is Jim Harney, and he will carry on. Jim, are you with us? Welcome, Jim Harney.
Thank you.
I have a friend. And my friend says, at times, Jim, you won't be able to show an image. So you are going to have to describe it. I breathe deep, having the opportunity to share some reflection about hanging on, hanging out with the crucified of the planet. Some of the most challenging experiences that you can ever, ever imagine. And I learned about the crucified of the planet from an incredible human being. I was a seminarian. I was a Catholic priest. And I, by chance, had a chance to attend a class that was part of our summer course to entertain us, to keep us busy. And it was a course on the Ebed Yahweh. The Ebed Yahweh, the suffering servant. And we had it for about a week. And it changed my life. But I didn't quite understand how it was going to change my life until I started to walk through the home, the bloodstained home of the Jesuits who were murdered in El Salvador. And I looked into the room of Ignacio Echeverria and saw blood all over the floor. I saw a German magazine on his desk, and it was intense. It was like John Sobrino, liberation theologian, talking about a modern-day Auschwitz in terms of everything shattered totally, simply because human beings were thinking about the world they were living in. And Echeverria was on the mark when he said, you have to live in the tension. If you're not in the tension, you're not part of the solution, part of the tension, the dialectic. He was a philosopher. He was a theologian. He was a politician. He looked Roberto Dobson square in the face in public television, trying to come up with a solution to the horrifying events that were going on in Central America. And he always came back to the empire, the great colossus to the north. And that's what I would like to touch on today. This whole notion of globalization and the undocumented. People who are being uprooted from their homes. Try to imagine being in the face of about a dozen people in Altar, Mexico, usually in the summer. I was there in October, November. Usually in the summer, they say thousands hang out in that plaza. Thousands hang out in that plaza, headed north, taking vans, going to the border, and then taking the risk of trying to cross over, and then talking with these guys. And then they say the long conversations with their wives about having to head north. The whole question of extended family starting to move through their bodies, their veins, their thoughts, all of the anguish about moving north to feed a family. And I had the chance to look square in the face, in the eyes of these human beings who were risking life, arriesgando, arriesgando. Risky. That's the word that's common, common, common amongst the thousands who head north. And we never see them. We never see them. My first read in the morning when I get on the computer is La Jornada. Forget the New York Times. La Jornada. And La Jornada kind of like kept me abreast, kept me abreast of the people moving north. Kept me abreast of the thousands of women who are being murdered in Guatemala that we never hear about. Kept me abreast of the enormous economic clout and muscle of the United States of America coming down hard on human beings throughout this planet. And I saw it firsthand when I was in Argentina. I went down after the meltdown. I saw toothless peasants out in the streets. They're the picateros. Picateros, one of the largest social movements in Latin America, and we never hear anything about them. We might hear about the landless peasants in Brazil, but the picateros in Argentina having to deal with an economic meltdown, impoverished people talking about bonds, talking about brokerage firms. That kind of discussion is totally absent from the world that I know of. And when I came back from Argentina, in order to identify with human beings that I hung out with on the tracks, ready to jump the freight cars, ready to hang out in the middle of the freight cars, inside the freight cars, and worried about if you shut the door, you smother. And the incredible part about it all is I found out about it a week before the trip was to end. I had to get a plane the next day to encounter all these people who had always been talking about los trenes, the murder, the rape, the humiliation that women have to deal with as they're heading north, having to face gangs who murder, who rob, who control the train routes north. The concrete world of the undocumented. I was in jail, Senator Snow's office, sitting out in a hall with about 20 other people. We were all dragged off to jail. And I get papers. And I was told, all right, fill out the papers. And as I started to look at them, the head guard came up to another guard and whispered in his ear, don't let him out until he shows identification. I had no identification. All of a sudden, I was undocumented, and they would have kept me in that jail until somebody proved who Jim Harney was. Then all of a sudden, the psychic energy of connecting with all those human beings throughout the planet who don't have papers. I'm trying to do something that I think almost drives me insane, but I'm riven to deal with it. And it's all again because of the Argentines, dealing with brokerage firms, dealing with Citigroup, dealing with JP Morgan, dealing with Deutsche Bank, some of the largest financial institutions in the world, much more powerful than the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank. We always talk about the International Monetary Fund, we always talk about the World Bank, but we never talk about those who control financial capital. And let me tell you that these human beings who are risking their lives, losing arms, losing legs, and I'm telling you, when you're around that kind of energy, when you're in the shelter of the Buen Pastor in Tapachula, Guatemala, you feel the energy of human beings who had a dream, and the dream turned into a nightmare. So when I show photos, I try not to look at the photos as, oh, Jim, do you remember those days when you're hanging out with Ricardo, with the people on the tracks, all the wonderful people you met along the border? I try not to reminisce. What I try to do when I look at one of those photos is, because I'm looking at a face, I'm looking into the eyes of a human being, I'm looking into what the Catholic bishops of Latin America said we have got to do if we want to get our hands on why there's poverty, why there's so much turmoil throughout the hemisphere, and that is to look at the face of the elderly, the young, the unemployed. And if we miss that face, if we miss that face, we are doomed. And it is that face that is being kept from us. And as long as it is kept from us, we walk in a world that will possibly lead us to be the walking dead. Alberto, I got a photograph of him, and it's amazing. He let me take his picture. And he's in his bed, and I slept the next bed over with three other guys in this one room in the Good Shepherd shelter. Alberto let me take his photo. No legs. Jim, I break up with my woman friend. 5 months later, my mother dies. 6 months later, he's sitting in a wheelchair looking at me, drops his eyes, looks at where his legs once were, raises his face, his rostral, his face, and he looks at me square in the face, and he says, Jim, do you believe in God? And I had to answer that question. I felt a little awkward, to be honest. Mr. Howell, you explain the reality of God with somebody who has gone through so much horrific pain. Dragged from the tracks, put in an ambulance, brought to a hospital, and not even having access to blood. And that's where Doña Olga Sanchez, the woman who runs this shelter, who is called the mother of the migrants, she's been mother of the migrants for 17 years, because when she got to Tapachula, she walked into a hospital, and in that hospital, she saw young children without legs. She saw women pregnant, dismembered, and the elderly, and outraged. A population living on the edge of the planet, about to fall off. 600 to 800 Salvadorans take that journey daily. And they're not excited about taking their 1,000, 2,000 mile trip to Al Norte simply because they don't want to leave families. Nobody wants to leave their families. But it's because of the economic havoc that's being hurled on the people of the world. The principal perpetrator, the capitalist system, back to Mexico. I'm at a shelter after a lot of walking. Ciudad Juarez is the town. Women by the hundreds have disappeared in that town because they all walk in the maquilas. They're pushed off the land, and I end up in a shelter. And I get to the shelter. Before it's open, there's a fence. It's locked, and I meet three people, a Nicaraguan and a Guatemalan. And I talked to them, and then a Honduran says, oh, and I've got a story too, but I never got to him until a little bit later. And I caught him inside the shelter, and I said to him, oh, I understand you have a story. And he said, yes, I do. I had a digital recorder. It was all new. And in a couple of days, people showed me how to run it and everything else, so I was able to come up with a PowerPoint that almost looked like a foreign film. The Honduran started talking. He said, 20 of us, including myself, we all left from El Salvador. I'm Honduran. And we headed north. And as he was talking, all of a sudden, he went into trauma. It was a very embarrassing situation to be there with a microphone. Should I stop it? Should I give him a hug? What should I do? 5 of my friends were shot to death by the 18, the 18 gang, Salvadoran gang, that one of the gangs that dominate the route. Another 5 fell off of trains, and Maria fell off, a 14-year-old, a friend of mine, and she lost both her legs. One fell off, the body cut in half, and tears pouring down his face. And some of us were walking through the desert, and they died because they were bitten by snakes. And I was caught by the immigration, and they sent me back. I was the only one who survived. I was the only one who survived. And I asked them, I said, do the parents of your friends know that everybody died? And he said, no. And when I go back to the village, I'm going to tell the parents that they all made it, that they found work, that it's best they just forget them. And then he closed in tears as he looked at me and started weeping, saying, why can't human beings treat us as fellow human beings rather than things? I've had enough. I can't do it anymore. I got to go home. There's pain here. There's life here. And it was very, very, very evident when I was at Tapachula, in a very sacred, holy place, when the dismembered welcomed me to their community. And I stayed there for 3 days. Didn't take a picture for an entire day. Taught some of the guys English for a couple of hours. Didn't translate. Had them thinking in English. They were able to go through all the scenarios. And when I'd say hello, they would say, oh, hello, and how are you? And then they would all do it, and they had no idea what they were saying, but they were able to respond to me. We all would all end up laughing. Manuel de Jesus was one of the guys that I was teaching English. And he was walking around with a walker. He had a walker in his hand. He was moving around, and he shared his story with me. And try to remember, and this is the way I look at it, that we cannot understand the story of a human being until we take into account the bigger picture of what it is that makes people feel, what it makes them cry, what gives them hope, where they despair. In other words, when we start thinking in global terms, all of a sudden our story expands. And it expands in a very exciting way so that we learn how to storytell ourselves in a way that's empowering. Manuel de Jesus. I was on the train. I fell asleep. Oh, you always have to worry about falling asleep. It happened in minutes, seconds. I fell off and I broke my back in 5 places. And the dream? Never happened. The dream ended up a nightmare. The face. I was trying to come back to the face. The story. Passion. Of all of us. And our ability to connect. I can't tell you who Jim Arney is. I can't even begin to tell you who he is. Until I begin to tell you about Manuel de Jesus. Until I begin to tell you about all of the people that I met in El Salvador, 20 of them murdered by death squads. I can't tell you about Jim Harney until I begin to tell you that I ran at the funeral of Bishop Oscar Anufo Romero and survived, came back to the United States in trauma. Never used the word. And after years, somebody said, you've got post-traumatic stress. And I said, by God, you're right. And thank God, there were people like yourselves that I was able to share that story with. Noam Chomsky. All of us who went to the third world, we come back into the first world. We begin to tell what we've seen, what we've felt. We begin to rethink about the place of the United States of America simply because we have seen those who have been impacted by the United States of America, and no one cares. The Economist saying that the distribution, the inequalities in the United States between those who have and those who don't, widening. And it's not an issue with the population in the United States of America. At a shelter at Agua Prieta, Padre Cabral, I had a chance to talk with him for an hour. And in the course of the conversation, I said to him, Padre, I have 2 weeks left. How can I use them? Can you give me some advice? The Padre gave me some advice. Let me share it with you. The next 2 weeks on your journey, what you could do is get proximate to the crucified, to the immigrants, to the ones who have lost everything, to the ones who are headed north, who are risking life itself. And when you photograph their faces, and when you show those faces, the hearts of human beings will be changed. Power of the face, the power of the story, the power of the impoverished of the world to allow us to bust out. To bust out, to be a Christian in our time, to journey, to go to the edge. And the edge, I looked it up in Spanish, vivir peligrosamente means to live dangerously. It's the edge. If we had a Tobin tax in the United States of America, there would not be one state in the Union in a deficit position. That would all have a surplus. There'd be money for education. There'd be money for health. There would be money in such a way that the future would be a lot brighter for all of us. But no one talks about it. It would certainly make the life of the undocumented much, much better. People say, listen, Jim, I think you're going a little too far when you say amnesty to all 12.5 million people who are in this country. Undocumented, illegally. They broke the law. They should be paying a $1,000 fine. That's what they have to do if they want to stay here. Come up with $1,000 because they did break the law. I look at them and I say, when human beings are starving, they have a right and a duty to break the law. They have a right and a duty to break the law. The present legislation made and created in the United States of America in the House and the Senate doesn't even touch the people whom I met. It never talks about Ricardo, the Salvadoran, 24 years old, that I met along the tracks, who was my guide. And Ricardo gave me his email. And I got an email from him. 2 months, 3 months after I got to the United States, Jim, since I last saw you, I was deported. And when I met him, he was deported. That was part of his story. And he was deported, why? Because he refused to pay a $10 bribe to a bus driver. So he was turned over. Jim, I'm crossing over. January 2nd. I felt like a parent. I knew somebody with a name. And I didn't hear from Ricardo for at least 4 months. And then I finally heard from San Antonio. Jim, I'm making $8 an hour. I'm a carpenter. And let me tell you about a story that blew me away. The tracks, I was driven. I had to get to the tracks. Get to the tracks. For 2 months, trying to figure out how would I get to the tracks. How would I encounter these people who had lost arms, legs, trying to jump the trains? So I got to Arriaga, Chiapas, Mexico. I got there at 11 at night. I had 3 days left in the country. I had a flight in Tapachula that I had to get out 3 days later. When I got there at 11 at night, I encountered a taxi driver. I flagged him down. Where is the migrant shelter? Oh, jump in. Took me 3 blocks down, about maybe 5 minutes. Then pointed down a road, no lights, 20 minutes down there. I got down and I still couldn't find it, and I saw some lights in a house, and I knocked at the door and somebody came and I said, oh, could you tell me where the shelter is? Oh, it's next door. So I got to the shelter and it was all closed up tight, not a sound. 2 people sleeping on the sidewalk right in front of the front door. And I went up to one of them and I shook him and I said, mi nombre es Jaime. My name's Jim. Soy gringo. I'm a gringo. Hay la posibilidad de dormir con ustedes. Is there the possibility of sleeping with you guys? Oh, no. Knock at the door. They'll let you in. And I looked at them and I said, I don't want to exercise gringo privilege. And they let me sleep next to them. And I looked up at the stars. I had a camera jacket on. I was traveling light. My camera's in my backpack. It was a cold north wind coming through. It was a little cold. Looked up at the stars. Checked the scene. and fell asleep. When? I don't know. Somebody nudged me, and in his hand he had this huge container. It was like a yogurt container. And he put it in my hand, and I opened it up. It was warm. It was fish soup. He bought it across the street in a home that was like a restaurant inside the home and everything. And he fed me. I can't tell you what that did to my body. I can't tell you what that meant to meet a modern-day Good Samaritan who cared about me. And I was foolish enough to say, oh, can I give you some money? And the guy was insulted. The next day, I walked into the shelter, slept on the floor. Oh, all the refugees coming up and saying, no, don't take our bed. Don't sleep here. And I said, no, thanks, I'm all right. Salvadorans take me out to eat and flip the bill. The undocumented feeding a gringo. I'm in Santa Fe. I was going to a Dunkin' Donuts. I'm addicted to coffee. And I had to leave to get to a school where I was going to be for 2 weeks with undocumented students. As I was driving to the school, I began to wail. And I tried to come back and image this blurred face, the image of the man who fed me, and trying to remember, is he okay? Did he make it? Did he die in a desert? Where is this human being that had changed my life? The situation of the undocumented throughout the world is perhaps one of the most challenging issues confronting us today.
That piece was edited by Sam West. And that was local activist and photographer Jim Harney. You may be familiar with his photographs of people from Iraq that adorn buttons and posters at many peace rallies in the area. There's more information at www.posibilidad.org. That's posibilidad.org. We're going to wrap things up today with Anita Arnold reading a passage in celebration of Women's History, or Herstory, Month.
Because woman's work is never done and is underpaid or unpaid or boring or repetitious, and we're the first to get fired, and what we look like is more important than what we do, and if we get raped, it's our fault, and if we get beaten, we must have provoked it, and if we raise our voices, we're nagging bitches, and if we enjoy sex, we're nymphos, and if we don't, we're frigid, and if we love women, it's because we can't get a real man, and if we ask our doctor too many questions, we're neurotic and or pushy, and if we expect childcare, we're selfish. And if we stand up for our rights, we're aggressive and unfeminine. And if we don't, we're typical weak females. And if we want to get married, we're out to trap a man. And if we don't, we're unnatural. And because we still can't get an adequate, safe contraceptive, but men can walk on the moon. And if we can't cope or don't want a pregnancy, we're made to feel guilty about abortion. And for lots and lots of other reasons, we are part of the women's liberation movement. Author unknown.
You've been listening to Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal. I'm guest host Sam West here with Amy Brown. You can reach us by emailing news@weru.org. Be sure to put Radioactive in the subject title. Thank you for listening and acting. Stay tuned for Hightower coming up next, followed by Free Speech Radio News and Democracy Now! Here on your community radio station, WERU.
Thanks, Sam.
Radioactive is made possible in part by Artisan Builders, providing environmental design, construction, and renovation for homeowners and local businesses since 1992. 525-7740.